lane, 15-10, touchdown, Chargers!
What's up, guys? We are back with another special edition of Chargers Weekly on the road in Indy at the 2024 NFL Scouting Combine. As always, joined by Matt Money Smith. And Money, typically it's just you and me on the pod. The luxury of having some amazing guests today and really all week.
Oh, I thought you were saying that Mike Silver's joining us from two tables over.
I think he is.
Mike doesn't know how to talk. Mike screams. I love Mike. We worked together for a number of years, and anytime you engage, he gets excited, and the decibels tend to carry a little bit. I thought that's what you were saying.
Maybe they didn't hear my intro
exactly,
over Mike.
Was joining. But yes, we got a lot of folks today, some people you're really going to want to hear from. Lance Zierlein, who I worked with for a number of years. We do the draft together, and Lance was, think of Dennis Eckersley. Not a one-inning closer. Lance was a three-inning closer because he would come in, DJ, Bucky, starting to get a little weathered, you know, on day three. You're in the sixth and seventh round. Lance, like, give me that ball, man. Let's go.
Ball.
This is my sweet spot. Truly the person that knows more about the players that are being drafted than anybody else doing this. He's got to write all the scouting reports for NFL and NFL.com, the books that we would use as our, you know, cheat sheets. He was the one that would pen them. So to have him on is going to be great. My favorite article every year when it comes to football, professional or college, is the Bruce Feldman freak list.
It's, yep.
And that's a lot of people in football will tell you that. So Bruce is going to join us, talk about the freaks that he wrote about earlier before the college football season, updating the freak list now with the draft upon us, what we're going to see here at the Combine. So he'll share a lot of that. And also, by the way, two guys that are very familiar with Jim Harbaugh and cover Jim Harbaugh and his assistant coaches in college. It can speak to kind of what the Chargers are going to get going here, going to get going with here moving forward.
So it's not hyperbole. Like, I wish both of those conversations went an hour each,
yeah,
because we could have gone on and on about the prospects and more about Michigan and Jim. And then obviously Jeremy Fowler joined us too.
Yes.
And we're going to roll that interview right now. Jeremy, so connected around the league, and you know, the first domino to fall really is getting cap compliant in free agency. So we get into that with Jeremy now. So let's roll that, and then we got Bruce and Lance on deck. Jeremy Fowler, ESPN, joins us. And Jeremy, every time this year, this thing gets bigger and bigger, and I don't think it could get any bigger, and yet it does. What's this week like for you?
So this week for me is just a lot of roaming, like get my steps in, just trying to run into as many people as I can. You know, team execs, scouts, coaches, that's kind of the name of the game. You know, for me, it's mostly about getting ready for free agency. That's probably my main focus at this point. But it's just a good launching of the offseason. Get to run into a lot of good media folks like yourself and old friends and things like that. So it's a good week.
How big of a deal was the salary cap bump? Like, did it take teams, in your opinion, by surprise? Did they think it was going to be that big?
I don't think it took them by surprise. It might have been a few million over. I think most had it around 250. So 255 was like a nice surprise, but it wasn't shocking. But this was sort of the anticipated jump from when they did the CBA a few years ago. Like, this was the kick-in, right? This is
right.
30 million overall. That's a big percentage inflation hike that will be far different. I'm just fascinated to see if teams will actually spend that money, or maybe they just cut less players,
right,
or save it in other areas, you know, because the struggle is always the agents will say, well, this is the cap spike, so these should be the salary demands now, and the teams are like not so fast, and that's sort of the song and dance.
Which is fascinating with the Chargers, because that's the first order of business is figure out Keenan Allen, Mike Williams,
yeah,
Khalil, and Joey. Those are the two,
yeah,
or the four biggest numbers,
yep,
on the cap sheet. How do you think they do this? Obviously, Keenan means a great deal to Justin. You know, Mike is a great young player, but you just can't keep all these guys.
Yeah, certainly they're going to have to kind of create a formula where you status quo is not going to work.
Right.
You know, the cap hits are all, what, 30-plus? I mean,
yeah,
it's more than half your entire cap. So my sense is, and this is – a lot of people are talking about it, the Chargers specifically, of what they do with those four guys. You know, Keenan Allen to me is a strong extension candidate. I just think even though he's up there in age – really productive player, was having a great year before he got hurt, and he probably could have played through that injury. It sounds like they maybe shut him down a little,
yeah,
bit when things weren't going well at the end of the year to sort of save him. But they can work something out, I think, on an extension. Mike Williams, loved the player, but coming off the injury, I think it's going to be tougher. You know, so I could see that as an outright release. We'll see. I know some teams were talking about Khalil Mack when I asked them about trade candidates. Like, I don't necessarily think the Chargers are shopping him, but he's on teams' radar, even though he's 33, big production last year. Some teams have just always had an affinity for him.
Maybe like a missing link piece to like a contending team?
Maybe. I've heard his name more than Joey Bosa. I don't know if that means anything. I think Mack's got some – he's got a market, I'd say that.
What do you think the number changes? Because kind of what our speculation was, and that's all it is if they can get a day two pick, that probably any of these guys are available. If that's,
oh, sure. Yeah. I mean,
do you think that's realistic? Is that pie in the sky?
I don't know. It might be hard to get a day two pick.
For Joey?
Yeah, at this stage. I mean, he's really interesting because he's always been kind of that high-end pass rusher, like as far as what you want out of what a guy can do and his technique and explosion and all those stuff. But I think it was, the last 4 years, only one season with more than 7.5 sacks. Like, right. I was shocked by that.
Yeah.
So they just he's been hurt and the production hasn't been there anyways. So it's like I know he's a great player, but I don't know if they can just run it back at that number. So and I don't know they want to extend him either. So you got to right. Maybe they can restructure it or come to sort of an agreement where he wants to stay. Maybe he wants to get out and go play with his brother in San Fran. I mean, it seems like all options will probably be on the table there.
I look at what Washington did last year with its younger edge rushers, right? You know, the Bears – trade a second, and then have to pay Montez Sweat.
Yeah.
Chase Young goes to San Francisco for a third.
Yeah.
Obviously, different case, but still edge rushers. It's a very interesting dynamic because Khalil has been healthy with the Chargers and very productive. It's like, all right, do you roll the dice on that for another year because he only has 1 year left? And then Joey, who hasn't been healthy, when he is healthy, he's among the best in the NFL. So do you think that, you know, eyes in the beholder, right? There's 32 NFL teams. Do you think that there's one team or two teams that may say, hey, you know what, we can work with Joey, or like we can make Khalil our missing link?
Probably, just at a cost. It really depends on what teams would be willing to give up on that scenario. And the Chargers, as long as they make a few moves, they don't have to address all four contracts necessarily.
Yeah.
You know, like if they get enough space, then they could maybe keep Mack at his number. It'd be tough, you know, because it's high, but these teams can create cap space with restructures pretty quickly. You can make $50 million go away in a hurry. So they have to make a few moves, but they don't necessarily have to do all four. So maybe they run it back with one of those two pass rushers at their current number.
Kind of one of the things that we feel like they want more than anything is to trade back from number five. But that, of course, is going to be predicated on a fourth quarterback working his way into that number five spot or maybe the third one slipping. So you mentioned free agency, Jeremy. You know, you've got Kirk Cousins, Russell Wilson. There are Justin Fields as a trade candidate. You know, it feels like Atlanta, Denver, Minnesota maybe, depending on Kirk. Like, how do you think the free agent thing works with these quarterbacks and where they may end up?
Well, Chicago's in the driver's seat. They really have to make a move before anything happens, I think. You know, they have to trade Justin Fields at some point and probably want to do it before the new league year. Out of respect for him.
Right.
That's assuming they're taking Caleb Williams or a quarterback at number one. But I haven't talked to anybody who believes the opposite.
Yeah. You know? And I think Ryan Pohl said that, too. He's like, we want to do right by Justin.
Yeah.
That's the direction we
I mean,
go.
He was hinting at that reality. Yeah. So that has to drop before anything else, I think. You know, the
what do you think that market is, by the way? Is it robust or no?
I mean, teams I've talked to say a day two pick. He's worth a day two pick. You
right.
know, maybe a second at the highest, maybe even a third, but a day two somewhere.
Right.
So not robust, but not bad.
Okay.
You know, but I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know a natural home for him. I would say Atlanta, but their offense with the coordinator coming from the Sean McVay tree, passing with rhythm and timing, I don't know if that's his right offense. Maybe they could tweak it. You know, Pittsburgh would be a great fit, but I don't know that they don't just run it back with Kenny Pickett and Mason Rudolph. So somebody has to be – in love with Justin Fields to do it. I don't quite know who that is just yet, but I think there's interest, certainly. But we'll see who pulls the trigger on it.
And what about Kirk? What do you think?
So, yeah, Minnesota's going to try, certainly. And my sense is, you know, he's been playing so well there that they'll try to work it out. But, you know, he's a great negotiator. He's got a lot of fully guaranteed or close to fully guaranteed contracts. And if they're sick of doing that, which they might be,
right?
That's their decision. Like, that's really, to me, it's an easy negotiation. If they're willing to do that, then it makes it easier to talk. If they're not, then, you know, he could get insulted and want to leave. And Atlanta would be the perfect spot for him, in my opinion.
So the draft is obviously where the Chargers are going to build their future, but with free agency on the horizon and knowing that they may not have a ton of cap space to spend, there are certain areas where you're going to have to get veterans, especially if you want to build this running game, because the Chargers' running game has been, frankly, one of the worst in the NFL. They're trying to change that completely, flipping it on its head. How do you do that, and what are the potential options as far as offensive linemen, maybe a running back that won't cost a ton? The Chargers have kind of gone down that well with fourth-round, third-round picks, albeit with the previous administration. But what do you think there on that front?
Yeah, you know, they're going to have a lot of options. Picking at five is an interesting spot because if you want to get an offensive lineman, it's probably too high for a guard. There are a lot of good tackles in the draft, but do you want to take one of five? I don't know where they have them stacked. Running back is fascinating to me because I definitely think they'll upgrade there, and they want to get somebody with some power and speed. And free agency has a lot of that. You know, Saquon Barkley, Derrick Henry, you know, DeAndre Swift, all those guys. So we'll see. You know, Josh Jacobs, if he gets free. And then you can always draft a good one day two or day three. So the theme seems to be to bolster the running game with a little more help in multiple areas. I think they'll probably get a guard at some point, especially it sounds like Zion Johnson maybe hasn't lived up to it yet, but he's a young player that he can maybe still grow into that. And some guys need two or three years. So it depends on how they feel about him.
It was it did not go well for the running backs that kind of voiced their displeasure with the way the NFL was working last year. The franchise tags, the amount of money they were getting paid really didn't deliver, and you saw these sort of discount deals deliver for Detroit, you know, for Chicago a little bit. Do you think we'll see that with these big names, with Derrick Henry, with Saquon Barkley, or do you think there's a market for them to get, you know, 10-plus million bucks a year?
Yeah, I think there's a market for some of them, but there are only so many chairs, and the problem is there are a lot of good guys. So, Derrick Henry, he'll have the option to go back to Tennessee, but it's probably up to him. I don't think it would be a huge number, but I think they would come respectably. Saquon, to me, probably still has the best chance to get, 10-plus million somewhere. But all bets are off of that market. It's just never been strong. Well, never, but at least for the last 5 years, it's just been a struggle. So I don't know if marquee names are going to change that all that much. They'll help, though. So, I think there's decent money, but not great.
Jeremy, how do you view this division now? It runs through the Chiefs. We know that's the obvious. But Antonio Pierce is now the head coach in Vegas, and they have a lot of work to do in terms of finding a quarterback and some other pieces. Sean Payton is looking for a quarterback, and – you know, the Chargers bring in the biggest name on the head coaching carousel in Jim Harbaugh. How do you view this division moving forward?
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Antonio Pierce. As far as coaching pedigree, you got like Super Bowl winners or national championship winners in Harbaugh's case, and then you got Antonio Pierce, who's just starting and never really been a full-time coordinator for very long at the college or NFL level. So I'm fascinated by that. He's going to bring an edge, and he had them playing good football late, so we'll see if that's enough. And, they can get the right quarterback and build around it. But they seem more set on a reset probably in Vegas, where it could be a year or two. And, the Chargers, they can, there's still enough talent where they can get good in a hurry. Denver's sort of middle of the road, but, I think they're betting big on Sean Payton. They feel like just with his pedigree, his ability to maximize talent, use talent the right way will pay off. It's still a strong division. Maybe not what it was supposed to be 2 years ago. Do you remember?
I remember that.
Best conference of all time, or best division of all time.
Yeah, they were talking about that because then, Russell was still a hot name. The feeling was he was going to elevate them, and obviously that didn't work out. So not quite as good, maybe not as good as the AFC North, things like that, but still respectable.
Last thing for me, Jeremy, appreciate it. I mentioned it kind of just a minute ago, and that's the fourth quarterback. And talking to teams, do you feel – like it's going to go 1-2-3 quarterback, and that maybe a J.J. McCarthy is now working his way up and making his way onto a lot of teams' radars as the guy?
I think it will probably go that way, 1-2-3. McCarthy's sort of a sliding scale. I mean, I've talked to enough scouts that love him. Maybe not top 10, but like, hey, if I was a GM and I was picking 12th or 11th or 15th, I'd certainly think about it.
Right.
So, you look at Minnesota at 11, Vegas at 13, some other options. It could happen. But I'd be surprised if he's super high. But the other three, there's a feeling that it could very well go 1-2-3.
Right.
Jeremy Fowler, I know you're a busy man. Appreciate you stopping by Chargers Weekly.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Well, Money, this is a treat for me. When college football and the NFL intersect, this is probably the best guess you can have, no?
Yeah, I think, you want to talk about bucket list when it comes to prepping for the draft. One thing you got to check is the freaks list. And it really is one of the most entertaining and informative articles that you're going to read every year. Bruce Feldman does it at The Athletic, obviously covers college football for Fox, very well-versed in what we're about to watch over these next few days, Bruce. But I would imagine, do people lobby you on their behalf to be part of the Freaks List? How does it work when you just start putting it together?
They do. There's a couple players who have done that. And so you have to check it out and see, okay, is what this guy has just emailed me out of the blue or over Instagram, is there, you know, is it legit? And most times it has been. It hasn't happened that many times, but it's like the guys who have, you know, you talk to the coaches and they're not thrilled that their players are probably self-promoting. But if they're legit, they usually like, okay, I do think, because a lot of times the guys who do this stuff, you know, it didn't happen by accident. They've done the work and everything like that. So what was really cool for me, because I've been doing it now for 20 years, and at some point at Fox, I became a sideline reporter. And before games, I'd be on the field, and there would be NFL scouts, and they'd come up and talk to me about the Freaks List. And I was like kind of blown away by the people who are reading it and the caliber of people in the NFL who have awareness of it. And then it kept growing. And so at one point, probably within the last 5 years, I started using the scouts for intel as well, because they have obviously a lot of it. And it just it's become a project I work on all year round, but really for like the last 3 months before it comes out. The one thing that got tricky in the last couple of years were, and I remember, you guys remember obviously Tariq Woolen, who's now been a terrific cornerback for the Seahawks. But when he was at UTSA, I mean, at the time, nobody knows who UTSA is really, unless you live in Texas. His coach, Jeff Traylor, we talked about him. He goes, when's this going to run? And I told him specifically, he goes, okay. He was like kind of hesitant, because at that point you put out that there's a cornerback who's 6'4", who can vertical jump 42 inches and runs a 4.33. You know, Big 12 and SEC schools are going to try to throw their way into getting that kid to leave. But if you run it right before training camp, he's kind of locked in. And I think that's one of the things that schools are like a little leery of, is putting somebody out there, especially if they're at a smaller school, that all of a sudden now a bigger school is going to swoop in and poach them.
Yeah.
We'll dive into this Freaks List. I want to start with just Jim Harbaugh and the fact that he's now in the NFL. You know Jim very well, and there's 18 Michigan players here. Just your reaction to him actually being in L.A. and El Segundo now with the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, even when you say it, it's still a little bit surreal.
Yeah.
You know, like, Jim was never anywhere as a coach for that long. This is the longest he had been at Michigan. And we had a lot of Michigan games. And, you know, it's crazy because I remember, I think Fox, we got, like, the first sit-down he had at Michigan. It was, like, one of these things where, because we'd been working to get it, and it was like, can you get up here by Tuesday or whatever? It was like Sunday night, and I was like, yeah, I guess. And, you know, all of a sudden it was kind of a whirlwind, and then I remembered his first game. They were playing at Utah. It was a Fox game, and it doesn't seem like that long ago, but it was actually a long time ago, right? And, you know, I think most fans, especially Big Ten fans, remember he was kind of on a hot seat of sorts. Couldn't beat the arch rival, the hated arch rival. And then, you know, I think he got a group of players who were really, really resilient. You know, in that group, Aiden Hutchinson, absolutely. And there was a bunch of them, and they finally beat the Buckeyes. And then I think they took a chip on their shoulder. It was like everyone thought that was a fluke. There was snow. It was this. It was that. And what you realize was him – and a name that I don't know if Charger fans know much about, and in I get it, college football is different in how it runs in NFL, but like his strength coach, Ben Herbert, was invaluable to them creating the culture and developing the toughness. And you mentioned 18 guys here, and they did things in the development aspect of players that honestly nobody has done in college football. Like Nick Saban's done at an incredibly high level in Tuscaloosa. But I do think they were working with like less, you know, they were working with more 4- and 5-star guys. And these, you know, there's a guy walking around here, and, you know, I hope you guys meet him, Chris Jenkins, whose dad was a famous, you know, defensive lineman. Chris Jenkins is, as Jim told me over the summer, the mutant of all mutants. And he was actually number one on our Freaks List. And he came in at like 250 some pounds, and now he's like 307, and he's super explosive, and he's selfless. And, you know, like he kind of, one of the guys, there's a handful of guys who I feel like epitomize Jim Harbaugh's Michigan program, and he would be one of them.
When you you mentioned he's, you know, kind of moved along, right? San Diego to Stanford, Stanford to San Francisco, San Francisco to Michigan. Do you think, because we know he tried to get out, like you said, there was a moment where it felt like Michigan wanted to get out, but
yeah.
Do you think that's maybe him evolving, maybe him changing a little bit, that he did stick around a little bit longer, that those two sides were able to get along a little bit better?
Yeah, and I do think from people I trust, you know, a year ago he had a real shot at the Broncos job. And from what I was told, he was like, I want to coach this team. And meaning this team being the 18 plus, you know, 18 guys plus everybody else. And I think he was really loyal. Like those guys, you know, around the national title game before, I remember there was a lot of stories from a lot of conversations about Cool Jim. And Cool Jim was like a, not an alter ego, but it was like they got to see different sides. And when it was really, when things were spiraling bad and they won two games in the COVID year, it wasn't like they were 2-10, but there was whatever 2-4, 2-5. And, you know, I think one of the players told me Jim sent them, you know, emails about everybody, including himself, had to look in the mirror. And I definitely think there was an evolution that has to happen there. Now, Jim Harbaugh, I think for people who are around him at Stanford and people who are around him at the 49ers, Jim Harbaugh is still Jim Harbaugh, which is a unique, like, kind of a wildly unpredictable spirit. I think he's still that guy, but I do know from, you know, one of the guys who was his right-hand man for a couple, you know, for a couple of years there is a guy named Biff Poggi, who's this, like, borderline billionaire who now is a college coach at Charlotte. And Biff, they were really close, and he talked about just how much that – Jim got to show the players a different side of himself a little more. Maybe it was that mattered. And I absolutely think there was an evolution of him. Still the same guy, but there was parts of it that I think there was real growth.
Bruce, we see you at training camp, and obviously Justin Herbert is going to benefit the most, I think, from Jim Harbaugh. In what ways do you think Justin's talents and Jim and the way he coaches can kind of meld together to kind of get Justin to where he should be in the NFL, frankly?
Yeah, I'm curious how that'll work. So obviously, Justin is super smart. You know, you don't get like a 4.2 in whatever biochemistry or whatever he was, you know, taking up there or majoring in. But super smart. He's obviously incredibly gifted. I think Jim's kind of not in your face style, but whatever, you know, like you know, he's too old to be called brash, you know, like, but he is, I don't know what exactly that the word should be, but I think he can probably bring some stuff out of Justin. And I also think, you know, whether the, and you guys are way closer to this than me, you know, with the Chargers, but like whatever there was that was lacking, I feel like Jim Harbaugh is probably what seemed to be what the franchise needed. Yeah. You know,
totally
and,
agree.
And yep. I can't wait to see it selfishly because I'm in LA, yeah. You know, and look, you know, full disclosure, I really liked a lot of the guys on the Chargers old staff. You know, there were people I had relationships with and everything, and they're good coaches. I just think that, you know, it kind of boggled my mind that Jim flirted with the NFL 2 years ago and he met with the Vikings on signing day. And it, you know, it, like to me. And I get it. I'm not a billionaire, and I'm not the guy paying the checks. But, like, what Jim Harbaugh did with the 49ers, like, they were spinning their wheels for a decade. And, like, by year two, he got them playing, you know, the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, there is no doubt he is a great football coach. So the fact that he landed in the Chargers and as opposed to, like, four other places is a huge win for L.A., and it's a huge win for the Chargers.
I want to get back to the freak list just because, you know, we hear the defensive players. You talked about Chris Jenkins. He's going to be talking on the other side of the curtain from where we're sitting right now if he hasn't already. There's three, it seems like, completely freakish wide receivers at the top of the wide receiver group. How, in terms of just, I feel like we have this conversation every year about these freaky wide receivers. Do you think that's the case that next year we'll have another great group, or are these three, Marvin Harrison Jr., Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers, truly, like, as someone who sees the freaks, yeah, and talks about every year, how are they outliers?
They are. I mean, look, like, it's funny because at Ohio State, Marvin Harrison Jr. was the best that's come through there in a long time. And anybody who watched the NFL knows, oh, yeah, you know, like Olave's turned out to be really good and Garrett Wilson's really good and Terry McLaurin's really good and, you know, Michael Thomas before that. And this guy is bigger. He's got, you know, better straight line speed than most than a couple of those guys. Like, it's almost like there's one quality that those other guys have that may match Marvin, but not in a combination. He's more polished than the other ones are. He's probably more mature coming out than the other ones are. And I say that all to get to, like, there's a guy coming from South Florida now who's considered the best receiver to come out of South Florida in generations, and he's going to Ohio State, and people there think, yeah, he's actually better than Marvin or more gifted. So,
right.
I you know, yes. Yes to your answer, but there's also, like, an asterisk with it.
Yeah.
Malik Nabers is a freak. Like, you know, seeing some of his tape over the last couple of days, I know Chargers fans are so high on him potentially at number five. When you see the needs on this team and the fact that they are picking at number five overall, Bruce, what do you think they do? I mean, it's late February. There's a lot to be determined. But, you know, in a perfect world, you could either get a blue chip wide receiver or you trade back and just get a ton of guys, build out this roster for the next several years.
Yeah, I think there's so many good receivers in this draft. I would be hesitant to spend a pick that high. You know, like, again, when I was out there in August, I was looking, and it's like you have a bunch of power forwards out there. Now, I know you got Darius Davis, who's super dynamic return guy, but, like, by and large, like, it's an impressive physical group. And, you know, is that the biggest need that you're going to – like, I think you can get a terrific receiver 20 picks later. You know, I really do. And I think there's probably 15 receivers who I think will be really good NFL players out of this crop. And there's some really – there's a lot of freaky receivers in this group. Now, they're different sizes, guys. But I definitely think, you know, depending on, like, if you ask me what are their – three or four biggest needs, I think this is a position where you can still accomplish the need and get something else maybe that high up.
I know on the freaks list, and again, it's at The Athletic, there's offensive linemen on there, and you know how Jim Harbaugh wants to play football. In terms of the O-line and whether it's at five or if they're able to trade back a little bit, but it seems like there are some exceptional blue chip freaky offensive lineman in this particular draft as well.
There are. I mean, Olu from Penn State is 6'6", 320, moves really well. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, Penn State, you know, had him at like 4'9", 7", and anything in the sub 5 when you're that big is remarkable. Alt from Notre Dame is a really polished, well-rounded, like, he is going to be a terrific NFL lineman. You know, I think you have a center who I think from Oregon, Jackson Powers Johnson, is just a beast. And, you know, I would ask your friend from, you know, who does the Senior Bowl, like, why are more people not talking about him? He was a dominant player. And I think he's only going to get better.
Yeah.
So.
Chargers fans are talking about him. There's like four or five guys, Bruce, that we hear about, I think, from fans. It's Nabers. It's Brock Bowers from Georgia. It's Jackson Powers Johnson from Oregon. But sticking with just the pass catchers, Brock Bowers, like, where do you land on him? He's an interesting prospect. He's a little undersized. And, you know, Money has talked about it, too. We have blue-chip receivers at the top. Based on how the salary cap works and what wide receivers are commanding, it almost makes more sense to just get the wide receiver early as opposed to a tight end like Bowers at five.
Yeah, I think he's a unique piece because he plays to me like he's 6'4", 260, not 6'4", 240. You watch him maul guys in the SEC, which is the most physical conference and has the best caliber athletes, and he would be dominant at times. Like, he's a kid from Napa, went to the SEC, and hit the ground running. I mean, you know, I don't think he's, you know, timing and testing here, but if he did, there were guys at Georgia who I trust who are like, he's capable of hitting 4.49. And if you watch his film is really impressive. I think he's, like, Jim Harbaugh did some really cool stuff with a lot of tight ends and a lot of different things he does in the run game. Brock Bowers would bring a lot of versatility. Like, he's going to be – like, I'm – if Kyle Shanahan were to ever get him, like, it would be, like, a huge problem for the rest of the NFL. Like, he's the guy where I feel like he plays so many different roles and is so good. You know, he'll test really well at some point, but I think he's way – like – you know, if you told me he ran 4.74, it's supposed to 4.54. I'd be like, it doesn't matter. You watch what he does, and he's just a great weapon. You know, how he would fit, again, with Harbaugh and what he likes to do with tight ends, I think they would be really creative. And, you know, obviously the Chargers is a franchise that, you know, I grew up remembering Winslow, and obviously people remember Gates. And it's like, okay, this is a different kind of guy in terms of, like, size and length. But he's such a playmaker that I think he'd be hard not to want.
I'll finish with this, Bruce, and we certainly appreciate the time. We know you got a lot going on. We were talking about just kind of the way that Jim described what he wants his team to be, what Greg Roman talked about with the run game and the physicality. And a lot of people are asking how does Justin Herbert fit into that? And I, a team that you obviously covered, and I called quite a few of their games, I said, well, I just look at when Greg and Jim were at Stanford with Andrew Luck, and the guy threw, you know, for 280 yards a game and 30-plus touchdowns in 12 games. Do you think – does that line up for you? Does that make sense, or is that just too different?
No, I think that's it's a funny comparison because, like, Andrew was a big, physically gifted guy who ran really well, who was incredibly bright. That's Justin, except Justin has a stronger arm, you know, and – like a less famous dad, I guess, you know, like, but, you know, and Justin didn't come through and definitely Andrew Luck was not entitled a former big recruit. That was not him at all, but he was like a borderline Manning-ish, you know, coming into, everybody knew who he was. Whereas Justin, you know, was walkable distance from Autzen and, like, you know, was on nobody's radar other than maybe Nevada and Oregon at one point. Right. So, but I think in terms of, like, the physical presence, I'm not saying he's going to try to turn Justin into Josh Allen in terms of what, you know, how many, you know, how he's running and what he does. But I think there's a lot of parallels between you have a big physically gifted quarterback who can really move and be a problem. You know, like, a lot of times the Michigan offense was not, you know, prolific in the passing game. But J.J. McCarthy would make a lot of plays with his legs. And I think that was a good get-out-of-jail-free card. And J.J. can really run. He can throw on the run. But Justin's like 3 inches taller and probably 30 pounds bigger. And in the NFL, I think that kind of – he'd be a problem in that. And I think, you know, Jim Harbaugh to me is far removed from being stats. You know, like, it's just like how do we – impose our will on a team, how do we break the will of the other team, and how do we win football games? And I think all those things can work when you have a talent like that.
Bruce, last one for me, and it's not Chargers related. I figure I have you here. It's been such an interesting offseason for college football with Chip Kelly leaving to become an OC, the BC head coach going to the NFL, Harbaugh retiring, Saban retiring. Is being a head coach in college football just so different now that – it's too stressful? Or, like, where do you fall in line in terms of why these guys are taking jobs in the NFL as opposed to just being a head football coach?
So it's a great question. I'm working on a story now about this. And a coach I know who is a really good position coach moved to the NFL, and we were talking about it over text. And he just sent back, he goes, you know why, and put period, the sport is broken. And I think if you ask six different people, you'll get three different answers, and they'll all be valid. But I think, you know, on one hand, it's broken for some guys because the calendar is all screwed up, and that leads to you have no off season and no work life balance. And then for other guys, it's the challenges that have come from NIL, and that could be because it screws up roster management, and coaches are control freaks and they want to be in control, and they're not anymore. And no one's going to feel sorry for them, you know, right, like that. But then there's also an element of how does this work with we have to dumb things down because now we have guys who are bouncing around so much.
Yeah.
It can't be as intricate, and that ultimately hurts them in the development part because we've had to simplify things a lot. And also, what does that mean to our locker room where everybody knows how much everybody's making? And there's you know, it's human nature. And so I think all those things are real. And if you can go to the NFL, you're probably going to go to the NFL. You know, I that's the vibe I got. I know too many guys here who are like, they don't want to go back. You know, I met up with a buddy of mine who I knew when he was a college coach. He's been in the NFL for a half dozen years. And his whole feeling, like he knows what's going on in college football and he watches it and he has opinions on it, but he doesn't want any part of it.
Wow. I know I said last thing, but just you're a coach too. And you're going to be coaching up some in a Chargers league.
In a Chargers league.
That's just launched, right?
Yeah. Snoop and Hoosh.
That's right. So, we're excited about it. So, I mean, thanks to them and thanks to the Chargers for spreading out youth football, you know, and I think the league that Snoop and TJ are doing is in three different areas. One, I know it's in El Segundo and Long Beach. I think the third area is Cerritos. And you know, it's good. I think it's probably good outreach, too, for the Chargers because, like, the kids at that age, especially in the age that I'm coaching in, is third and fourth graders, where I think some of them already know, depending on the kid, what kind of kid it is, but some of them already know these teams, who the players are. But, I mean, you know, like, we all grew up rooting for certain teams, and whatever makes it take hold, you know, matters, you know, right? And
right.
So, I think it's going to be really – I think it's going to be really fun.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it. Next Freaks List, third and fourth graders.
No, hopefully not. No, we're going to draw the line on that.
Yeah. Bruce, we appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bruce. Money, the heavy hitters keep coming. Why don't you introduce our next guest?
Yeah, so Lance and I had the great pleasure of many years here at the Combine for NFL Network and NFL.com of doing the Combine from the field. And we would sit at the finish line at the 40, and we worked with Maurice Jones-Drew. I know that's why you're laughing, and Ike Taylor, and just had the best time. You know,
yeah.
when we first got this going, we were just kind of talking about the advent of technology and how much things have changed. But NFL.com would just open a stream, and from the second the Combine started until the second it was over, we'd sit there for 7 hours, and Lance – for people that don't know, I'm sure most people know if you're watching this, but Lance is the guy that has to know every single player that potentially could get drafted come April. He's the one that writes all the bios for NFL.com.
Yep.
And for all of the people that work at NFL, so I would basically just plagiarize what you were writing, Lance, and make it my own. So it's great to have him because any question you have about any player in the draft, he will be able to answer it off the top of his head, and it makes it an awful lot of fun.
I was, you know, it's gotten harder over the years since I've got 5,000 of them done. The recall's not as great as it was. And I remember after 2016, we were in Chicago, and you sent me a text. It meant a lot to me. And you sent me a text. I was headed back to the airport. You were flying out. It was the last on-site draft that we did was in Chicago, saying, man, I can't believe you're able to come – like, really impressed you're able to come up with these guys' information. And I really could, like, as soon – and I'll get like that again. It kind of jars the memory again when you write so many of these scouting reports. They kind of run together. But – this is a great refresher at the Combine. Players I wrote back in November, I'm like, oh, yeah, I like this guy. I forgot about that.
Right.
And so we'll do that. But doing Combine stuff with you was always a blast, and Bucky and just the people around that broadcast made it a lot of fun. And frankly, I think what we did then was really the map of what we've seen more and more television broadcast. I'm in radio, have been for 26 years, much like you. So the idea, my show has always been a fun show on radio. Really, that's leaking into football. And what we did on our draft broadcast and combine podcast was always informative, but very approachable and relatable. And I think that that's where more and more, and I think in a good way, more and more sports has gone in that direction. Maybe over the top sometimes for some people. But
that's maybe why I'm sitting here.
For what?
and why you're making the rounds. Maybe because it tends to happen. I tend to go a little over the top.
No, not you. I mean, other shows I see now, like, oh, this is too much. But, no, you had a healthy dose of knowing mascots, knowing interesting facts on every player, and then having the ability to mix in historical presidential references into a cornerback. Yeah. You know, things like
again,
that.
Again, why I'm sitting here.
Listen, Lance, NFL podcast too, what you do with DJ and Bucky and just how that has grown over the years. And I guess we should just start with Jim Harbaugh and the fact that he's the Chargers head coach and what that means for the team moving forward in terms of how they're going to play football and how different the roster may look?
I think that hire and the strength coach, Ben Herbert, are two massive, massive hires.
We hear Ben Herbert, the hire of Ben Herbert, how gigantic that is.
Ben is a monster. I got to know Ben during the Joe Moore Awards. We presented the first, it's offensive line of the year in college football, and we presented it at Michigan, and I met Ben Herbert. And let me start with Herbert. This guy's incredible. He blends. When you see him, you know he's a strength coach. There's no doubt.
Figure that out right away.
Goatee, bald head. He's got a strength coach vibe. He's not small. He lifts legs and upper body and arms, all of them. But the other thing is he's very in tune with physical performance and assessing physical performance. So he does stuff with stretching and flexibility measurements when guys first come in. He does things with body composition. He's open to sports science and analytics of any kind. Like, he's very open to everything. And then he gets results. If, like Money will tell you, every year at the Combine, it's Michigan guys who are putting up these incredible numbers, whether it's Quiddy Pay or Aiden Hutchinson. This year, Roman Wilson's about to blow you away. He's one of many. Mike Sanistrill, the cornerback, is going to be good. But what happens is, Ben knows how to get the most out of players from a performance standpoint, maximizes their explosiveness, and he does it. And I asked him, I said, you can do it coming from high school to college. I think that's in the wheelhouse. What about coming from, you're already starting in the pros? And, his whole thing is, no, you can always get better. You got to look at your process, and if your process isn't right, we'll change it. But he's a guy that players love, they respond to. The weight room stuff, he gets people hyped up in the weight room, and he is an essential hire for Harbaugh because, as football people will tell you, that weight coach can make – a strength and conditioning coach can make such a huge impact, certainly on the collegiate level. But I think more and more people are understanding it can make that kind of difference in the pro game too, especially as it pertains to being open-minded to taking in all forms of improvement – maybe some that fall outside of the norm of what the old NFL strength coach, mode yeah. was. Jim Harbaugh, I think Jim Harbaugh is a coach who players, he's not a yeller and screamer, obviously. He's a coach who's a little different, when you talk to him, you get the sense that he's got a little Zach Greinke vibe to him, which I think we'll all kind of understand what sure. that means. He's just, a different guy. But at the same time, players love him. They play for him. And there's just something about him where he understands. I wish I could say it's some kind of genius X's and O's, or he's the wunderkind defensive guy or offensive guy. I don't know what it is. It's just the Harbaughs know how – the family knows how to CEO yeah. organizations, and they know how to get the most out of people. And I think that's maybe what the Chargers need right now. You got talent. Can you start bringing it all together and I guess just executing a little higher level.
That's for people that don't know, Lance's dad, longtime offensive line coach in the league. You've been around that particular position group. You write the scouting reports for every single player, regardless of position. But you really excel at offensive line because maybe other people don't pay as much attention. You go into great detail. So let's start with what they have, mm-hmm. what they drafted in Zion, what they got in Jamari Sawyer, maybe what they stumbled upon in the sixth round there. They're two tackles. We know what Slater is. Mm-hmm. Pipkins is on a pretty affordable contract. Mm-hmm. How much difference can Ben Herbert and Mike Devlin and Nick Hardwick make with that current group versus using their first two picks on a tackle and a center?
Well, I think there needs to be some upgraded talent. I mean, honestly, I think the right tackle spot, I like what Pipkins does, but it needs to get better if you want to compete at the highest level, which starts with just winning the division. There's some very good tackles. This is a great year for tackle. I think San Diego's Chargers, LA Chargers are in a really great position because where they are is an easy trade out. You can move out. There's going to be a ton of people that want quarterback. If a quarterback's left, you can move back and still get your hands on one of the top three or four tackles. And I think there's going to be different teams that really have different grades on 1 through 4, 1 through 5. But I think moving back, adding draft capital, and then locking in on a tackle would make sense. You could go wide receiver, certainly, in that spot, and that would be I think that'd be great. But I also believe that this is a really deep draft in the second and third round for wide receiver. So when I look at the composition of the draft, which you have to look at it in a macro view, too many fans get excited about first-round picks, but really the draft and working the draft, second and third rounds. You talk about Salyer, who was a sixth-round pick. I mean, that's an example of how a very cost-effective player can step in and have a big role. To me, you know, Fuaga from Oregon State is a phenomenal pass protector. I think you could look at J.C. Latham, who is a potential Pro Bowl guard if he needed to move to guard. He's a people mover, but I think he's a good pass protector too. That's a guy who could be available. You could potentially move, you know, 5 to 8 to Atlanta. You've got Denver, and as J.J. McCarthy's stock rises, you have Denver and Minnesota and all these teams, the Raiders right there at 13, who could be in a rush to move up. And I think 5 is a sweet spot where you can move back and still get a great tackle if that's what you want. And let's face it, generally speaking, you need to find the really good starters in the top 40 picks for tackles. You can talk about it being a deep draft all you want, but wide receivers, you can go find guys in the second, third, fourth round. Tackles, you kind of need to have them a little earlier. That's just when you look around the league, and, of course, we can find some outliers or some solid third rounders who became starters and things like that. But I just think you should build your roster to be a championship team. And to do that, having bookend tackles is a really big deal, especially when you have Zion Johnson, who I think is, you know, going to be a rock solid member of that interior. It's always a little bumpy for rookies. That's just the way it goes. But I think, you know, Mike Devlin's been around the block. He comes from an offensive line family. His dad was a longtime O-line coach, actually Devlin's dad was maybe a D-line coach, if I remember correct. But his dad was in the league, and my dad coached him, I think, at Tulane. So I like where the Chargers are headed, but I do think offensive line allows you to impose that will a little bit more.
You mentioned the different flavors at tackle and that different teams will have them ranked differently. Which tackle do you think makes the most sense for what Jim and the offensive line will accomplish?
Oh, J.C. Latham. So what they do a lot of is they'll do a lot of combo blocks, a lot of duo, which is the double team, and then work up to linebackers and stuff like that. He runs out a lot. It's kind of a cloud of dust mentality up front when he was at Michigan. And so you want somebody who can – and I think their tackles have been fairly average for the most part at Michigan. But from guard to guard, they're tough. They're physical. Zach Zinter is a guy who's hurt right now, but I think he's going to be a good NFL starter. You draft J.C. Latham from Alabama, and you're getting a guy who immediately starts moving people off the ball, and you start to loosen that edge up, and you get a guy like Eckler if he's back, or really anybody, you start running off tackle. There's a lot more room there. So from a pass protection standpoint, I think he's technically sound because he went to Alabama, and their O-linemen are always very technically strong. But the other thing is he has that ability, which you don't see as much now with such an emphasis on pass pro. You have two guards that are smart, technically sound run blockers as well. Mm. I mean, not guards, but tackles. So you got a left tackle and a right tackle who would have the ability, I think, to work great on double teams and really take some pressure off of Herbert in the passing game because you'd be able to run more. I mean, it's got to happen. You can't ask Herbert to do everything. You got to take some pressure off. But Latham, to me, is the first guy I think of. And then, you know, the next one actually – could be Fautana from Washington. He's a mauler. He's tough. You don't have to get him that early, but if you wanted to move back and maybe move back again, he could be sitting there and at either right tackle or guard because you're not moving Slater no matter who you draft. So I don't think you will. So I think the Chargers are sitting in a great spot, man. Really a really advantageous spot.
What about just basically, Lance, the way they worked the money at appears as though Corey Linsley is going to, in fact, retire. They need a center. Everybody talks about Powers Johnson, but, you know, it looks like there might be one in the second. Like, what can you say about the centers in this draft? Because it looks like they're going to have to draft one. Probably.
So, Hunter, I think it's Norzad from Penn State, is a starter in this league, probably a third round. He came from Cornell where he was a tackle, went to Penn State. He's 319 pounds. He's broad. He's got good size, about 6'3". He can play guard or center, which you want. To position flexibility, and he's very he's physical, but he's got great core strength. So when he hits guys, and I'm talking big guys, he rolled Johnny Newton from Illinois. I mean, Jerzon was He had him and was moving him around, and I'm watching him like, how are people not talking about this guy? And I realize, oh, because he's just some center who had come over from Cornell,
yeah.
And no one really cares about that except me and people like me.
As you can tell.
Yeah, and
how
I'm like,
excited Lance gets when he starts talking about
this. I was like, what are we doing here? Why is no one talking about this guy? I just wrote him, I think it was last week, he was probably my 331st write-up or something like that. And I'm like, well, this is a starter. Here's a 62 for you. And so you can find starting centers. I know everyone's talking about I think Graham Barton's going to be the best in this. Powers Johnson.
Is that the guy from Duke?
Yeah. Tackle. He's totally tackle and guard, but everyone says he can snap. He's terrific. But you have guys who, to me, you can go find starters third, fourth round, especially Harbaugh. Harbaugh knows what they look like. They're gritty. They're physical. They get your hands on guys fairly quickly. And you don't have to have tremendous range in his offense either. So if you do, it's a big advantage. But You don't have to do that in the early rounds. You can go find him in the third round.
It seems like Powers Johnson, everyone's talking about this guy, and Zach Frazier is the other center that we've been kind of talking about on this show. Is there a gap? Is there a huge gap between the guy from Penn State and those?
No, for me, Penn State's ahead of Zach Frazier. I'm lower on Zach Frazier than other people.
Okay.
I think it goes Graham Barton, a little bit of a drop-off to Powers Johnson. Then I think Penn State, I think I have him three, I believe. I'll have to see who I have as my third center. And then Zach Frazier for me is going to be fourth or fifth. So we'll see. I'm not as high on him. I don't think he goes in the first. DJ does, so we'll see who's right on that one. But it really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
For what Jim Harbaugh does, you don't have to spend crazy draft capital on the center position. But, you know, he might look into it if you really want to firm up the offensive line. But I just think – I don't know. How important do you guys think the wide receiver position is? I mean, they're older.
We talk about it a lot, and it's – you know, there's a couple different, you know, I think schools of thought. One, Herbert's so good, he's going to make the other guys great.
He's supposed to, yeah.
You know, so do you really have to take him? But if, you know, Roma Dunze is what DJ says he is, and that's Larry Fitzgerald, how the heck do you pass up Larry Fitzgerald to be sitting there? Like, that's what you're trying to negotiate.
And we don't know what Quentin Johnston is, really. I mean, disappointing first year.
And I was a little lower on him after watching the tape. Didn't think he was a real confident catcher in traffic, had too many drops. It was a little bit of – watching the tape is a little bit of a concern for me. I ended up being lower than I expected. But, you know, do you want to get in a spot where you're drafting back-to-back first-round wide receivers? I don't know.
On a Harbaugh team.
Yeah, on a Harbaugh team. Roman Wilson would be a terrific second-round selection.
Just pause there because I know you're going to get rolling here in a second. If I forced you to take – if I said, hey, you've got to take a Michigan player in this draft, where you think they're going to go. Like, so if it's a first-round, you got to take them in the first-round. Second, you know what I mean? So you're going to have to draft that player where they would get drafted, but you have to put a Michigan player on this Charger team to play for Jim Harbaugh. Which one would you want and which round would it end up going?
I think I would.
There's 18 of them.
Right. Yeah, no,
that's why it's taking so long.
It's a great question. I'm going through both linebackers right now. I'm going through Chris Jenkins. I mean, I'm working my way through.
Right.
Not crazy about the two defensive ends. You got the nickel. I'd probably say Roman Wilson
because
he can work all three. He's a very fluid athlete. And
that's the wide receiver for people listening if you're not familiar.
I think he's going to run a 4-3-3 here probably. Ben Herbert doesn't miss. So when he tells me a guy's going to run something, he runs it.
Right.
So he's going to run about a 4-3-3, which is what he told me. He is a great worker. He can work the first level with catch and run stuff. He can do a lot of slant. He can get open. He's very hard to guard out of the breaks. And then he's got that speed to take the top off the defense. So give me a guy who works all three levels, knows the offense. I'd say Roman Wilson would be that
and
guy.
Where are you drafting him? What round?
I'd draft him. I'd prefer in a second. You guys have a second, right?
Yeah,
I'd go second. I think he'll be there in a second.
All right, but Jesse Minner being the DC, which defensive guy do you think would make the most sense? Because you got Jenkins. You mentioned the corner, Junior Colson at linebacker.
Junior Colson would, the linebacker from Michigan. I think if you could find him in the third.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'll be there, but if you could find him, my guess is he goes sometime in a second, but that would be the guy. He's a very physical player who can run, and he's got a lot of attitude. And one thing we've seen with Roquan Smith going from Chicago over to the Ravens is when you get a guy like that who kind of sets the tone, players around him start playing more confidently. Yeah. We saw that with Patrick Queen became a different player when he had an alpha in the middle. And I think that's one of the things that Colson might be able to bring to the table as
Love
well.
It. All right, last thing, because you got to go.
Yeah.
Real quick, for people that are watching, the combine, what's the one player they got to watch who's going to just light this thing on fire?
Oh, man, Chop Robinson. Chop Robinson on tape, you know, the production's not great, but you watch him.
Penn State defensive end.
State defensive end, number 44. He's like a Micah Light, where he doesn't really know how to rush yet, but he's so explosive, fast, and bendy that he can just beat you around the corner. He's probably going to jump out of the gym. He's got a chance to run in a 4.4s. I think Chop Robinson is going to be the guy to watch, especially on Thursday and the first day. And then Byron Murphy from Texas is about to run in a 4.7s at over 300 pounds, and he's going to jump about 36, and he's going to have a workout to remember as well.
Right on. I wish we could do this for an hour.
He's the best. Lance is the best, man.
Lance, thank you so much.
Yeah,
man. Appreciate
not a problem. I love it. Thanks, guys.
So there you have it. Like I said, I wish the Lance conversation could have gone an extra 30 minutes. He's got places to be. He's at different stations here on Radio Row, whatever you want to call it here in Indy, but awesome conversation.
Well, I think certainly, I mean, one of the things we can do is just get him back, you know, and it's probably for the best. I'm kind of hungry. I mean, because Lance won't just go for an hour. He'll go for three. So, and I kind of would like to go grab some lunch. You know, I kind of a late breakfast. So, the medium meal here didn't do me any favors. I thought it was going to be a nice, like, chicken Caesar wrap.
What was it? What was it today? Because
do you think it was? Was it like an Italian cold cuts with a – it was almost like a salsa that was in it. It was a very strange combination. So, I took a couple bites. I looked at Carly. She dusted it. I was like, all right, you're going to finish it. Not me. I'm tossing this thing out after
Carly,
a couple
do you want to give your take? You want to give your hot take on the sandwich?
No. It doesn't.
We got our Chargers video crew here. They're the best in the business.
Absolutely.
And man, it's been so funny. We're not done yet. Tomorrow, another A-list guest list, and we probably have some more for the rest of the month, man. It's just been nonstop here.
It's been great. It's the combine. You know, everybody descends upon Indianapolis. It's where hope springs eternal. Players that you think are going to turn around the fortunes of your team, and a lot of people that spend a heck of a lot of time. It reminds me a lot of the NCAA tournament, where nobody pays attention to college basketball. Then all of a sudden the tournament arrives, and everybody's suddenly an expert. They're like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, I've long said George Mason was the team to keep an eye on. And it's like, yeah, I haven't watched one. Same thing with this, is now you've got people that are like, Chop Robinson, tell you something. I was watching all those Penn State
tell you
games.
About Chop.
I watched that guy coming off the edge. No, you didn't. You just read Lance's scouting report, and now you're telling us that you love Chop.
Yeah.
But that's what happens. It's always one of the entertaining things about the combine to me is how invested people are in a New Hampshire running back. That they're telling, oh yeah, best running back since Chip was there. You know, when Chip Kelly was running the ball for New Hampshire, I love this guy. He's going to be great in the seventh round. But and that's what we're surrounded by right now. A bunch of people that are all of a sudden experts on all things college football and projecting them to the pros. And that's what makes it fun because nobody knows the answers to the test. There is no answer key. It's going to take us 5 years to figure it out.
The one thing about this week too, the GMs and the coaches not stressed. The only time they're not stressed, I think, during the year.
The coaches. So, like, especially the coaches. That is one thing. The first year I came here, it blew me away. And I'm not going to name names, but, like, there's certain spots where you go drinking. And, like, it would blow me away how many coaches were absolutely tying it on night after night. I'm like,
it's like, this is spring break for coaches,
because
basically.
They have no responsibility.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, whatever. I got nothing to do. I don't have a game to coach. I'm just out here having a good time. And saw a handful of them last night, as a matter of fact. And they have very interesting drink choices. Like, is this a glass or is this a bucket of tequila? This is for you? This is your bucket of tequila?
What was it? What was the drink?
It was a double Reposado neat. And he asked for a block of ice, and they said they were out. And he's like, that's fine. I'll take it neat. And when I say they poured this double Reposado tequila, it was he handed him a $100 bill. And they handed him, I believe, like $10 back. So it was clearly it was top shelf tequila. It was at least four fingers of tequila in this glass. And he just walked away like it was an Aperol spritz or something. You
this
know?
Is the
like,
inside
all right,
stuff.
Man, this is what we're doing tonight. All right.
This is inside information you get in Indy.
And the next coach, by the way, asked me if I could get him a yellow Red Bull with ice. I was like, excuse me? He's like, they'll know what I'm talking about. I was like, all right, yellow Red Bull with ice. And that's all he was drinking. And
it was just a straight Red Bull?
Straight Red Bull with ice at about 1 a.m.
Okay.
It's like, okay. Well, you know, because we got to stay awake. Apparently, we got to mix it up a little bit here. I need to get this yellow Red Bull in me at 1 a.m.
The coaches, baby. I will say this, too. We got here on Monday night, and Tuesday it was like 70 degrees. Walk out of the hotel today,
30.
Reality struck me in the face.
Yeah, it's a bit of a firm punch. Now, I've been to combines. I think we've had two or three in the past. I can distinctly remember two where it was negative. And I remember they wouldn't let us walk through the tunnel to get to Lucas Oil. So we used to, you know, the Indianapolis is connected by skywalks. So when it's cold, you can stay inside from hotel to the mall to restaurants to Lucas Oil. You never even have to go outside from your hotel. But they wouldn't let you go underneath the street to get into Lucas Oil Stadium because that's where they used to conduct all the medical exams. So you could, that was off limits to everybody except for the doctors and the players that were here for the combine. So we would have to walk outside from basically the end of the skywalk to the front entrance of Lucas Oil, which if I had to ballpark it, maybe 50 yards is what you're talking about. By the time, and I hope this isn't too graphic, by the time you would walk out the door this one year, it was so cold, and you got to Lucas Oil, the snot in your nose would freeze.
Frozen.
And your nose would be frozen together from those 50 yards. Like, that's how cold it was, because your nose would start running the second you got out the door. And by the time you were in the middle of the street, it's now getting hard. And then by the time you get to the door, you're like, what is this? Where am I? Why are we doing this here? It's not okay.
We just went to the CVS. Yes. I just went with our crew, and David Bretto, I don't want to name names, but David Bretto was like, I don't even want to go in the CVS. I'm so cold. I'm going to stay in the van.
What did he get there, by the way? What did Dave get?
He got a Pedialyte.
Hey, some people go, people go for the double reposado, huh?
Electrolyte Max.
Exactly.
Somebody who may have gone to Kilroy's. I don't know.
Exactly. Some people go for certain things. Other people go for a nice light 95-calorie beer with an orange slice in it.
And we're not going to name any names. No.
You're having a good time.
Oh, Chargers.
We hope you're enjoying the pods. That's for sure.
It's been fun, man. And we got one more to go. Our normal time, Thursday, Chargers Weekly. For Money, I'm Chris. We'll see you tomorrow.